All right, so season highlights. So this is the big one this year, defoliator wise. This is the birch leaf roller Epinodia cilandriana. We mapped over 330,000 acres of damage to this thing this year. That's the biggest outbreak since about 2003 or 2004. We mapped just under 200,000 acres, I believe. So this is kind of an episodic thing. There's some argument about whether or not this thing is actually European or if it's circumpolar or what, but these are extremely variable. That's kind of a typical looking one there, but the diamond on their back, so to speak, the whiter part is, they can have that completely white, or the whole moth can be white with that spot, that triangular spot, chocolate colored. There's all kinds of variations of this thing. There's also 20 species of Epinodia in Alaska. So there's, with the variability so high, still have to dissect a bunch of them and make sure that it isn't one of the other ones. So it's, there's kind of a gestalt to them. I've gotten pretty good at picking them out of crowds, but yeah, they're extremely variable. Willow leaf blotch miner is way down this year, under 6,000 acres, after 2 years ago we had 500,000 acres. So this one's kind of falling off. Geometric moth defoliation, appears that this outbreak, it's a big regional outbreak actually. The whole western boreal forest in North America has experienced a big geometric moth outbreak. And it seems to have reached its peak, and it's getting less and less. There's two main species involved. There's an Epirita. Undulata is the proper name for the North American Epiritas. And that's the kind of the stripy, these kind of fuzzy-ish. They're not fuzzy at all, but they look, the pictures kind of makes them look sort of velvety almost, with all those fine stripes. And then the dark ones, there's one kind of in the foreground, that one there, and then these here, the kind of two-tone ones, those are Operophora, and it's Bruciata. It's not the invasive winter moth, it's the Bruce spanworm. And that both are well known to outbreak. They're very closely related to Epirita autumnalis, which is the European, the Palearctic species, and also Operophora brumata, which is the Palearctic species. So they're kind of sister kin on the different continents, and they all have these outbreak behaviors. So mostly these are feeding on alder and birch. The Operophora is a little bit more of a generalist, and it's been seen feeding on everything from berries to trees, so it's almost omnivorous. Rusty tussock moth, that's a male. The females are wingless, as are the geometrids, but this isn't a geometrid. But rusty tussock moths, they have periodic outbreaks. Most of these things outbreak anywhere from 10 to 30 years in, apart, for anywhere from 3 to 5 years usually. But these are on the upswing. These feed heavily on willow and alder, birch. We've been working on this defoliator guild study, trying to document the shift from leaf mining insects to exterior defoliator insects, and this, it seems to be based on this Pacific decadal oscillation. And last year I had a picture where this was only recorded through 2011. This one goes into 2013, so as you can see, we're this has continued where we're in this cooler, wetter zone. And it'd be nice if it continued into, you know, continued its sort of oscillation like that. So, but we'll see. So far, it's holding. Here is this is Manly Hot Springs. I guess I did stick a slide in here, so you can see the big pile of logs that was left. There's a lot of birch in there, but a lot of spruce too, and you can see the density of emergence holes was almost twice that of down in the Tocan Delta area during the course of that slash management study that I just told you about in that last presentation. So really huge number of beetles, and we're really expecting a big outbreak, but we probably got a little bit lucky between the weather and that tarp being pretty thick. Both seem to conspire to work out all right. So, and you may also remember from last year the big blowdown that occurred between Tocan and Delta. About a million acres affected, about 300,000 acres of 50% or greater blown flat material. There's some live pictures there. This one's taken from a helicopter in September. It happened September of 2012. That's shortly after it happened. But all these trees are, they're all permanently bent. They're either stump jacked from the wind, or the fibers in the wood have separated and have caused this peculiar bend. And this is driving down the Rich Highway between Delta and Tocan. You can see all you almost get vertigo while you're driving because all the trees are kind of tilted. So it's odd. It's really odd.
What do you mean by stump jacked?
That's when the roots on one side are broken, and it's kind of and trees that are damaged, like, I'm sorry?
This was the first week of November, 2012.
Yeah. The trees can languish for years, and that's why we thought, you know, we're kind of assuming that the first year they'd probably go after the fallen fresh material laying flat on the ground, and the next year they'd go after stuff that's still alive but's heavily damaged, and then if we're in outbreak status, then they'd be going after these trees that would otherwise survive, but they're pretty damaged and presumably stressed. So we went in there with traps to monitor what's going on. We, you know, time being a constraint, of course, we couldn't like plant traps all over the place. But we put traps at five sites along the road. We're concentrating on an area where the state and the Village of Tana Cross was going to be doing some cleanup work, and so these traps this is the results of that monitoring. So the green ones are less than 150 beetles per trap, and yellow is between 150 and 300 beetles were caught in that trap. Set of traps, yeah, they're sets of three, sets of three traps. Or did we put five?
No, over 2 weeks.
Right, yeah. And so the populations have been low in the recent years, so we're really interested in how this is going to change perhaps next year. Looking on the ground at trees that were down, the attacks weren't as high as you might have thought, but we think that's because the populations are really low. So we're kind of expecting the populations to be building up this year. Village of Tana Cross, I believe, is they're finished with their cleanup, but the Division of Forestry is going to look at a couple more blocks to clean up this year. So that's part of the Western Bark Beetle Initiative program. Forest Service matches the amount of money that the state is putting into the cleanup. So they put in $50,000, we put in $50,000. It's a one-to-one match. All right, so now I'm gonna keep moving along here. Any questions on that stuff? It's kind of the Forest Service update.
Are you gonna
continue to track there for a few years?
Yes, we'll keep monitoring that. As we've monitored the, some of the major burn areas, since 2004, we're monitoring every year for the first 4 or 5 years, and then we went to every other year. But burns seem to be different than some of these other disturbances, so it'll be really interesting to see following this into the future. All right, so I'm giving this part on behalf of Ken Phillip and myself too. So this is, as you may know, we've published a checklist of the moths of Alaska. And then, as is normal, as soon as you publish a checklist, you find things that aren't on the checklist. It becomes a target. So. This was captured right in Juneau, right at the USDA office there. Liz caught this thing. It's got her fingerprint on it, as you can see. Anyway, turned out to be a new record for Alaska. It's a kind of snappy looking noctuid. The light in the room here doesn't really give much help to the beauty inherent in such an awesome lab. But anyway. Also pretty awesome, underwing moths, genus Catocala. It's kind of funny because Larry Gall predicted when he heard I was moving to Alaska, he predicted which species I was going to find up here perhaps, and so far he's 0-for-2. We found two different ones than what he predicted, so and neither of the two that he predicted we'd find, so that's kind of funny. So these were captured by Susan Weiseagle, I believe. And so these were caught out in the Wrangell area. So another southeast new state record. Very similar species is this one. This one's a balsam poplar feeder. This one's a willow feeder, Unijiga, different species. So pretty neat. Also Susan Weiseagle. So she's knocked it out of the park with this. Not just new species, but new genus for the state. So.
Two specimens and they're both different.
Yeah, she got two specimens and they're two different species. It's pretty neat. And I think they're on the same, within a day of each other too. So, new species a day. So, also in the moth department, there was something that was turned in feeding on apple and was reared out and on the Kenai, right? And it was, it turns out that it's in the family Carutidae. And we have one species on the Alaska checklist that is in that family. This looks like it might be a new species, and it's apparently, if it's the same one, it's been captured before, but this time we're trying to get a series of them over to a specialist in Florida, John Heppner. And so far, I sent him 4 out of the 6 specimens that you sent me, and they're all females. He needs males.
Oh.
So I gotta, hopefully one of the two is gonna be a male.
I have a few more.
Okay, cool. So, Prince of Wales Island, got a new butterfly recorded now in the state, Ballaria epithori. So this is a western, one of the lesser fritillaries. So Prince of Wales Island, I've always said that if you can put people someplace for an entire summer, they're gonna find something that
This came out of Jill's project.
This came out of Jill's project. Not one, but 2 butterflies. This may be Pieris oleracea. Look at the ventral side there, and the picture on the right-hand side. You can see the underside is really white. And here's the similar species that it might be, marginalis. And you can see the difference. There's yellow, kind of yellowish background with the darker stripes underneath. The summer, this picture is taken in July. This is kind of the summer form, and it's a little bit paler, but female's yellowish. This thing's pretty clearly white.
Your traps pick those up? You just hang them.
So pretty cool. So potentially two new butterflies and three or four new moths. It's been a good year for that kind of thing. So if anybody has any questions, kind of whip through this because we're...
Did you get a specimen of that one that Liz found?
Yes, she did collect that. She took its picture and killed it, which is good. There's a lot of cases where we've had things photographed or reported and not collected.
Is that checklist on our website?
There's a link.
There is, yes. If you look at from our website, there's a fauna tab, and then one of the two of the submenu items is a checklist, and there's an explanation of what the checklist is, and it's live data from Arctos, so if we add something.
That moth publication is incorporated in, so the published records plus anything new are also all available.
And did you mention how many moths?
700 or something.
Yeah, it's close to 800, I think. I was going to mention that Torticity, you know, I mentioned there's 20 species of that one genus. There's 142 species of Torticity in the state. Some of them appear to be undescribed, but when I moved up here, I was given a list of Torticids that Jerry Powell had been keeping for Alaska, and there was 45 or 46 species on it. It's tripled that. Kind of cool. And we haven't really reached an asymptote with the number of species we've been catching. Just the more we look, the more we find. So that checklist has a couple of North American records too. Okay, well, that's it for me.